It is Friday, the 22nd of July, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, Donald Trump walks away from the U.S. Republican Convention as its standard bearer.
We will be a country of generosity and warmth, but we will also be a country of law and order.
We'll talk with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, who covered the convention in Cleveland. He's still there, as a matter of fact. Also ahead, is the failed military coup in Turkey good for democracy, as their government contends? We hear a different opinion on that. All on today's International Edition. We start International Edition today in the city of Cleveland, Ohio, where the Republican Party of the United States has wrapped up its convention, with Donald Trump coming out on top, as had been expected. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone now joins us from Cleveland. And Jim, what's your overall impression of what went down?
You know, I've covered a number of these conventions now, Ira, over the years, and this was one of the more unusual Republican conventions. They're usually very scripted, very organized. They keep to time. There's nothing untoward that happens. But we had a couple of things happen this past week, and partly it suggests that the Trump campaign has a ways to go in terms of their own organizational efforts. But I think the broader and more serious thing is that divisions in the party still exist. Donald Trump may have made some headway with his speech and sort of healing the party a bit. But the question is, will they be as enthusiastic to get out and vote for him as they might be someone else? He's probably made some progress on that point, but it is an open question.
Well, everybody's talking about division in the Republican Party. But there are, as we understand, some factions in the Trump family that are urging him to go a little bit more toward the center of the Republican Party as far as its policies are concerned. And then you have Trump, Mr. Trump, who, when he is not scripted, tends to go the other way.
Yeah, what we saw in his acceptance speech was primarily a scripted speech, reasonably well delivered, I think. You know, there have been some critics who said it was too dark, focusing on law and order, protecting Americans, you know, the mood of the country, the need for change. Those are calling cards for his political base. I think the question is, can he broaden his appeal to moderates? That's usually the pathway to winning, beyond this sort of primarily older white electorate that he's relying on right now. I'm not sure how much of that he accomplished in his acceptance speech. Certainly the delegates in the hall were very excited to hear his main points about law and order at home, defeating Islamic State abroad, and of course, you know, his primary theme of making America great again, which they see as a rallying cry.
He really used his family in this convention.
You know, that was probably one of the more successful aspects of the convention. All four of his children did well. His wife, Melania, did well, except for, of course, the flap over the plagiarism issue, cribbing words from First Lady Michelle Obama from several years ago. And even the way the Trump campaign handled that, playing that out over a few days, was probably not the best. It proved to be a distraction. And the whole, of course, disunity issue, Ted Cruz giving a speech and then being booed, it just puts on display that the party has some work to do to heal itself. But, you know, I have to add one thing. The best unifier for the Republicans right now may not be Donald Trump. It's probably going to be Democrat Hillary Clinton.
And let's delve into that just a little bit as you head from Cleveland to Philadelphia, where the Democrats will be holding their convention starting on Monday. And again, much like the Republicans, the winner of this thing is a foregone conclusion. How do you expect them to handle their convention?
Well, they've got some unity questions to resolve as well. Bernie Sanders has endorsed Hillary Clinton. The question is, are his followers going to follow her into the general election campaign as intensely as the Clinton campaign would like? That's an open question. And that will be somewhat dealt with, I think, in the week in Philadelphia, bringing the party together, rallying behind Clinton. And guess what? We're going to see the inverse of Cleveland in that if there is a unifying factor in the Democratic Party, it might be one Donald J. Trump. So I think we're going to hear a lot about that in the week to come, but also setting out their own far different vision for America, not as dark as Trump might have it, wanting to build on the change that President Obama has brought, but also realizing there is an appetite for change in the electorate, and Clinton will not want to be tagged purely as a candidate of the status quo.
What is it about Hillary Clinton, do you think, that is garnering so much criticism? Obviously, the Republicans are criticizing her, but her numbers and the poll numbers are not that great.
We've got two candidates who have challenged in terms of their negative ratings in the polls. Trump is a little bit worse off than Hillary Clinton, but Clinton has a lot of baggage. And it's a completely different situation from Trump. She's been in the public spotlight for a couple of decades. People have pretty strong feelings one way or the other at this point. I'm not sure how many voters she could sway, but it's such a complicated picture with Hillary Clinton, from First Lady to Senator, Secretary of State, and now presidential candidate. She's got some challenges. She doesn't do well in engaging voters, say, as some other candidates do. And I think she's also going to find a way to be a little bit more open, not only with the media, but with, you know, the critics who have, you know, pointed things out about her. It's one of those areas she's going to need to work on, and I think it's something we're going to watch next week in Cleveland to see how she handles that kind of scrutiny.
VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone reporting to us from Cleveland on his way to Philadelphia. Jim, thanks again.
Thank you, Ira.
From Jim Malone, let's go to Andrew Palcheski, who watches social media for us. And the convention, still a big trending thing going on?
Absolutely, especially Donald Trump's speech last night. And as we've talked about time and time again, you fall into one of kind of two camps, the pro-Trump or the anti-Trump people. The pro-Trump people said it was a great speech. It was his presidential moment. It kind of consolidated the convention that was kind of haywire with Melania Trump, her plagiarism controversy, Ted Cruz kind of not endorsing Donald Trump, going off script, if you will. So they said this was the moment that they needed. Trump's opponents, as Jim Malone mentioned, some of them saying it was dark, it was a brooding speech, it paints America in a bad light, and they're saying it doesn't change his extreme position. So you have this back and forth, and as we go into Philadelphia next week, it's the Democrats' turn. They're going to be facing some of that scrutiny. But I did see one tweet about Ivanka Trump. Of course, she introduced her father. Somebody said, you know what, why can't Chelsea Clinton and Ivanka Trump just run against each other? These seem like two very capable, sensible, rational people. I'd rather see them running. So the parents aren't getting a lot of love, but the children are.
Well, yeah, and the two of those, both Ivanka Trump and
Chelsea Clinton.
Chelsea Clinton are friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've known each other for a long time, about the same age, and they get along with each other, and they know each other.
So there may be something there. Maybe they can have a unity ticket in the next generation. Who knows?
Who knows?
But the other story that's trending right now that we're monitoring is a situation in Munich, Germany, a shooting at a shopping mall. Information is just coming in now, so we're just learning about this through social media. And actually, one of the things we're seeing is people putting up pictures not from this shooting, but from another shooting that happened in Johannesburg, South Africa, about a year and a half ago, and claiming that it's the Munich shooting. So we're seeing a lot of misinformation and a lot of people fighting back saying, no, those aren't the right pictures, take those down. So we're seeing a lot of back and forth on that. We'll continue to monitor that situation. And fascinating, we're seeing not professional TV images from this shooting site, but we're seeing Periscope, people just filming it with their phones, and that's what the news networks are picking up.
Yeah, and again, the evolving place of social media in journalism and in just everyday life. And one day we're going to get together and we're going to do a whole show on that.
Absolutely.
Andrew Palcheski, you can stay in touch with him on Twitter at Apal, A-P-A-L. And you can get in touch with me if you'd like.
At VOA Melman.
Thank you. That's Andrew Palcheski here on International Edition. Among the top stories today, Donald Trump spends his first day as official nominee of the Republican Party for president. France sends arms to Iraq but says no to sending soldiers. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says climate change is just as important as the fight against Islamic State. Nearly 3,000 immigrants have died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea since the beginning of this year. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
When we hear X marks the spot, many of us might think of old pirate maps and where treasure is supposedly buried. But X marks the spot could also have more of a cosmic meaning, thanks to a new study published in the Astronomical Journal. The study's two authors say that the X in this case marks the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Using data from NASA's Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, or WISE, a configuration of stars forming the letter X could be seen within the galactic bulge located at the heart of the galaxy. Now, NASA describes this bulge as a round structure of tightly packed material that includes old stars, gas, and dust. While previous reports have mentioned the central X structure, the authors say data gathered for their study provides the clearest indication of the X shape so far. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. We turn our attention to Turkey, where their prime minister has warned of the possibility that not all of those responsible behind last week's coup were apprehended during the ensuing crackdown. As a matter of fact, there have been some reports, although still unconfirmed, of some gunfire still breaking out in the capital city of Ankara. Speaking to reporters in the capital city today, Prime Minister Binali Yildirim said that there is a remote chance that some madmen, as he called them, might take action, acting out of a sense of revenge and defeat. He criticized the United States for demanding evidence to extradite Islamic scholar Fethullah Gulen, who Ankara claims is responsible for the coup. Now, the state of emergency that the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has declared is giving him even more power to expand a purge that already has seen an estimated 60,000 people either arrested or suspended from their jobs. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez has more from Istanbul.
He has not set foot on Turkish soil in 17 years, but Fethullah Gulen's name evokes strong emotions among Erdogan supporters.
We are here to care for Tayyip Erdogan. Let the angels take him under their wings and Fethullah Gulen be damned.
Those in Gulen's movement are reluctant to talk these days. A building where his books are printed and distributed has a flag covering its door sign, a sign of fear. Gulen's movement is strong and secretive. Few here admit belonging, but the movement has a massive presence in education, operating schools, its members holding posts in the military, intelligence, and the judiciary, sectors where Erdogan's purges are now happening. A writer working for a newspaper in Istanbul's Trump Towers has been investigating Gulen for 16 years and was once jailed by a judge who was a Gulen follower.
Why did he go? It has nothing to do with his business activities. Fethullah Gulen is like this. He sits humbly on the couch, but wants the whole country under his feet.
Erdogan and Gulen were once allies, sharing a vision of soft Islamism, but it became clear Turkey was not big enough for both of them.
That power in time caused these two partners a disagreement because Erdogan is not someone who likes to share his power with anyone.
Erdogan's crackdown is focused on institutions where Gulen is believed to exert influence through his followers, who tend to be highly educated and Western savvy. His brand of Islamism is attractive to many who want to live their Islamic faith in the modern world. With the U.S. allowing him to live on American soil, many Turks see a link, true or not, between America and the failed coup that is changing Turkey. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Istanbul.
The government of Turkey is portraying the failure of last week's army coup as a victory for democracy. VOA's Oskar Oskarov asked Dr. Corey Shockey, a research fellow at the Washington-based Hoover Institution, if she agreed with that.
I'm hesitant to agree with that. I do agree that overthrowing an elected government by military force is a bad thing for democracy, but I'm extremely worried by the breadth of repressive measures that the Erdogan government has taken in response to the coup. They have now arrested over 6,000 people. They have almost 68,000 people have had professional or personal repercussions from it, fired from jobs, taken in for questioning. It seems to me very unlikely that a coup was that widespread, and actually quite a dangerous thing for democracy in Turkey that President Erdogan is casting his net this widely. So, yes, the coup attempt was a bad thing for democracy, and it's also true that Erdogan's crackdown afterwards is bad for democracy.
The Turkish leadership accuses Fethullah Gulen and his movement as the mastermind behind the coup attempt. How credible are these accusations? Is there an implicit accusation against the U.S. government here?
I think there has been an explicit accusation against the United States government by President Erdogan, by the Prime Minister and other Turkish officials, suggesting that by not extraditing Fethullah Gulen, we are complicit in association with the coup. And I think that's an outrageous accusation. The American government has asked for corroborating evidence of Gulen's involvement, and I'm confident that if there is any proof that he was plotting to overthrow a government allied to the United States, that we will extradite him.
The Turkish military has traditionally been viewed as a guardian of the secular order established by Ataturk. Following the failed coup attempt and the reprisals against military, has it permanently lost that role or any significant role to shape Turkish politics from here on out?
I think it lost the ability to shape Turkish politics before the coup attempt, to be honest. I think the progress of democracy in Turkey was advancing, and the advancement of representative government in Turkey was leading to an Islamization of that government before the coup attempt by the military. I think the Turkish people have repeatedly made a choice that they wanted moderate Islamist governments, and the Turkish military has long been opposed to that. But I also think that's changing within the Turkish military, because former Prime Minister, now President Erdogan, has purged the military leadership of its most ardent secularists even before the coup attempt.
There are some observers who view the events of last week as Turkey's 1979 moment, as it happened in Iran. Are we on the verge of a historical shift in Turkey's orientation from a secular state to a religious one?
No, I don't think so. Only because I think that milestone has already been passed. I think when Prime Minister Erdogan started moving against his domestic opposition, started jailing journalists, shutting down TV stations, I think he began to look more authoritarian and behave more along the line of traditional Islamists who once in government, remove the ability of domestic opponents and democratic forces that are counterweights to their power.
For a long time, there has been a debate about Turkey's membership in EU, the process of Turkey's movement toward EU. Given the developments of the recent week, the question arises once again. Is Turkey Europe?
I think Turkey can be Europe, but I think Europe is safest and most stable when it defines itself not as geography, but as a community of values. And Turkey had been aspiring to those values. I hope it will continue to aspire to those values. But I think the repressive nature of the Turkish government will make it a very difficult thing for the European Union to move forward in negotiations on Turkish membership.
Dr. Corey Shockey, a research fellow at the Washington-based Hoover Institution, speaking with VOA's Askar Askarov. This is VOA.
The political party convention is a critical part of the American electoral process. VOA correspondents are there, reporting the latest developments.
Jim Malone, VOA News in Cleveland.
Catherine Gibson in Cleveland, VOA News.
Tune in to VOA's extensive, up-to-the-minute coverage of the U.S. presidential election.
As we continue on International Edition in Washington, how the stock market is reacting to everything that's going on in the country and the world is proving to be quite interesting. Watching the numbers and trends as always, International Edition's business editor, Jill Malandrino, in our studios in New York, just a short walk from Wall Street. Jill, what's going on?
Well, you know what? The major averages seem to have no memory or care in the world for quite a lot of the events that we have going on right now. The major averages open relatively flat, but have been moving higher since then. And essentially, they're looking to bounce back after small pullbacks that we saw yesterday from record highs and to end the week on a positive note. Stocks ended lower on Thursday as the Dow snapped its 9-day winning streak. Now, this is the longest winning streak we've seen in 3 years. Weaker oil prices weighed on it a bit, and renewed investor caution ahead of next week's Fed meeting and profit taking after trading to record highs of the year. I really don't think that there's going to be much volatility around the Fed event. I don't think they're going to do anything in terms of raising rates anytime in the near future, certainly not in 2016. So I think that's going to be a non-event, and the focus is really going to continue to be on earnings. Let's talk about earnings a little bit. We had an incredibly busy week this week as 88 companies of the S&P 500 reported earnings. The beat rate in the second quarter is currently at about 63%, just below the historic average of 66%, but we've only had about 20% of the S&P report. So.
Jill, I thank you so much.
Okay, you got it. Thank you.
Okay, talk to you soon. That wraps it up for us. Our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Peter Henley. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Human rights abuses in North Korea are among the worst in the world. Numerous reports by the United Nations, non-governmental organizations, and the United States have documented the enormous suffering of the North Korean people as a direct result of their government's widespread and systematic human rights violations. State Department spokesperson John Kirby outlined some of those abuses at a press briefing.
Extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, arbitrary arrest and detention, forced labor, and torture. Many of these abuses are committed in political prison camps, where an estimated 80 to 120,000 individuals are detained, including children and the family members of accused.
As part of U.S. efforts to promote accountability, the State Department recently issued a new report on human rights and censorship in North Korea, also known as the DPRK, which identifies North Korean officials and entities associated with these actions. In conjunction with the report, the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control imposed sanctions on 11 North Korean officials, including leader Kim Jong-un, and also sanctioned 5 entities involved in the North Korean people's horrific repression. Other officials designated include Choi Pu-il, Minister of Public Security, Choi Chong-bong, Director of the Ministry of Public Security Investigations Bureau, and Kang Song-nam, Third Bureau Director in the Ministry of State Security. It is the first time the U.S. government has officially named individuals involved in the worst aspects of the regime's repression. The complementary designations mean that if any of the sanctioned individuals have assets in the U.S., they are frozen, and that American citizens are prevented from doing business with them. The action represents the start of an ongoing process to identify and name persons involved in rights violations in North Korea. State Department spokesperson Kirby said that sanctions can have real financial costs. They reverberate around the world and can have an impact on the way other countries and international bodies consider doing business. There is also a power, he noted, in naming the individuals responsible for such cruelty. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Samantha Power said such efforts send a clear message, not just to the senior leaders, but also prison camp managers and guards, censors, secret police, interrogators, and persecutors of defectors. The world is documenting your abuses, and they will not be forgotten.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Africa.